We'll get started here in just a moment. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Kevin.
We are we have quorum and we are good to go whenever you're ready.
Okay, good. Give me one second to just kind of arrange my screens here.
I'm having trouble here.
Okay. Okay. Ready to roll. Okay. Good morning, everyone. It is time for the Arizona Board for Private Post-Secondary Education Finance Committee meeting to commence at 10:02 a.m. on March 23rd, 2023. And I'm going to read the pursuant to, hold on. Let's see. Pursuant to ARS 38-431.02, notices hereby given to the general public and members of Arizona State Board for Private Secondary Education. Whoever's talking, could you guys mute yourselves? That the board will hold a complaint. Oh, this is the wrong one.
Yep.
Finance Committee on the date and time above, which is today. Meeting will be held digitally online. Full meeting agenda can be found at ppsc.az.gov. The board reserves the right to change the order of items on the agenda, except for those matters set for a specific time. The formal hearings and formal interviews are scheduled for a specific time box. Americans with Disabilities Act. Persons with a disability may request a reasonable accommodation, such as a sign language interpreter or a copy of this document in an alternative format. Come by contacting Kevin LaMountain at 602-542-5716 or the number 800-367-89.
Can you hear me? I can't hear you.
And done the call to order. And Mr. LaMountain, can you take the roll call?
Dr. Mittman.
Present.
Dr. Mittman is present. Mr. Ball.
Present.
Mr. Ball is present. Mr. Wallace. Mr. Wallace, we can hear you, but I don't think you can hear us. So Mr. Wallace is present, and I think he's trying to dial in.
Okay.
So, and then staff, Keith Blanchard.
Present.
Noelle Vetter.
Present.
Jacqueline Rome.
Present.
And I'm Kevin LaMountain. So everyone is here.
Great. Okay. First up is, or next up is review, discussion, possible action on Finance Committee meeting minutes. So we have the meeting, the minutes from the last meeting, which I can't believe was June 23rd, 2022, Finance Committee meeting. Is that correct?
That is correct. We did not have one in the fall.
Okay. Hence the long agenda. Thank you.
Correct.
So we have the meeting minutes from June 23rd, 2022 of the Finance Committee meeting as the official meeting minutes. I will make a motion to accept the minutes. Can I get a second, please?
This is Doug. I'll second it.
Okay. Mr. LaMountain?
Dr. Mittman?
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Mr. Ball?
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Mr. Wallace? Mr. Wallace is he's here, but we're going to abstain on that for now until he gets on.
Okay. All right, well, let's get started. First school is Arizona Christian University. And let's see. Representing the institution as the president, CEO, and VP of finance. And would you like to make an opening statement?
Yes, Dr. Mittman. Thank you for the chance to be with you this morning. My name is Len Munsell. I'm the president of Arizona Christian University in my 13th year. I realize it's been 6 or 7 years since I was back with you all, and that was back in the era when we did everything in person before we realized how efficient Zoom could be. So grateful for a chance to be with you this morning. Wanted to update you and introduce you kind of to our new financial team. In the past few years, I know Kevin will remember working with Dr. Steve Adamson, who is our provost and executive vice president. Dr. Adamson was recruited to become the new president of Erskine College in South Carolina last year, and was delighted to speak at his inaugural in September, and he's doing great with a really historic college in rural South Carolina. So I wanted to introduce you to our new team, kind of in the finance area. First of all, we have James Tito. James Tito is our chief operating officer and has really provided great leadership on the finance and the business side of operations at Arizona Christian University. He comes from a background as the CEO of a large publicly traded company, and kind of made a midlife career change and left New York, and has been involved as the CEO of large religious nonprofits subsequent to that. He joined us in the fall of 2021. As we've made this, growth and trajectory from really a small Bible college to a Christian liberal arts university, he's just got a tremendous business mind and has made significant improvements at ACU already. And then also we have with us our new Vice President of Finance, Michael Werner. And Michael was a corporate CFO in town. He's actually a graduate of the university, and we're excited to have him with us. He's in his third month. Great skill set, great enthusiasm, and learning the business of higher education under Mr. Tito's tutelage and others. Just a quick ACU update, and then we're looking forward to your questions. In 2021, we went through our reaffirmation of accreditation and really had our best reviews ever from the Higher Learning Commission. And subsequent to that time, in January, a really significant step for the university is for the first time, we were approved to offer graduate degrees. And, for an institution that for 63 years has been offering bachelor's degrees, that opens up, obviously, a new revenue stream for the university that we've never had before, with a master's in education and a master's in marriage and family therapy. We've seen, since I came to the school, growth from a school of about 400 to close to 1,100. We have kind of a trajectory that's pretty rare in the small college space right now. I would say it's not been easy, but to, quadruple our budget and almost triple enrollment. We obviously had a major thing happen in 2019 where we moved to a much larger campus, the former Thunderbird School of Global Management, through an extraordinary agreement with Arizona State University. Prior to that, we were growing and kind of out of space. And since coming to the new campus, we've grown 50%. And ironically, the first year we got here, that was COVID year. And we continued to grow through the COVID era, unlike many colleges. But obviously, the effect of COVID on recruitment, not having a large marketing budget. We rely on college fairs and actual recruiting on campus to grow. And so with that being shut down for 2 years, we continue to grow, but it definitely affected the trajectory. So we're excited to kind of be in a new era and be able to recruit the way we historically have, applications year over year, are significantly up again heading into next fall. And so we have an incredible amount of momentum going and have had over the last 12 to 13 years. And we're just excited to see what's next and grateful for the work of the Arizona PPSE. And I said, we've got the finance team here and prepared for, I know we submitted a number of documents and so whatever questions you have. Thank you for the chance to be with you this morning.
Sure. Well, thank you, President Munsell. So I'm going to share with Mr. Ball and Mr. Wallace that the document that I prepared that has all of my notes somehow didn't make it across the cloud. Everything that I'm going to say will be from memory. So I'm going to rely on you guys more than usual. And so do you want to start off with any questions for the team at Arizona Christian University?
I don't have any questions at this moment.
Okay. Well, Mr. Ball?
No questions at this time.
Okay. Well, I have questions. Unfortunately, hopefully everything, the cloud computing issue that I have doesn't extend to my misunderstanding of things. So in the documents that you shared with us, the school posted a loss last year in your last audited financial statements, I think about $1.1 million, $1.2 million, something in that area. It took your composite score from where it was a year ago at 1.53 down to 1.07, which puts you in the zone, which is like the red zone, but not like the football red zone. And so, what communication have you had from the Department of Education, and what impact do you anticipate that the composite score will have on Title IV access?
Yeah. Great question. One of the things that I've seen over 13 years, and as you have the kind of rapid growth that we do, the challenge, of course, is that you get evaluated in these 12-month snapshots. And so I would tell you that I think in our 13 years, we've been in and out of the zone two or three times. And we've gone – so we haven't heard anything from the Department of Ed yet. Their timeline usually lags, pretty significantly months, if not a year, before you actually – usually you're out of the issues that you have by the time you get some consequences for them. On previous occasions where we've been in the zone, we have been on heightened cash monitoring for Title IV funding. We know how to do that. We can navigate that. It hasn't really had an effect on our operations. And so that's one of those things where if you did a composite score based on the last 2 years or 3 years or 4 years, we'd be fine. But year in and year out, there's sometimes these deviations related to costs related to, infrastructure, repairs, things like that. When you don't have, separate accounts for those things, you have to manage all of that through your operations as you grow. And some years are affected by major gifts that come in, and they don't necessarily come in that 12-month cycle. In the years that they do, you look great. And then in years where you're still working on them, but they haven't come in yet, you don't look as great. So we don't have any consequences yet. I'd be surprised if they're any different than what we've dealt with in the past.
Okay. And bank covenants, I know that you had a debt service coverage ratio, and the second one wasn't called out in the notes. I assume is it days cash on hand?
Yes.
Debt service coverage ratio was a little bit over one, and the cash on hand was about 30 days. But I don't know what the, what the minimum, was for those two ratios. And I'll say in solidarity, as a president of a small school, all of the things that you've, shared are, I'm acutely aware of the ups and downs. Since you have a master trust through bond financing, I'm also aware of the consequences of bank covenants. I guess the question is, like, you know, where are you at with the bank covenants? And is that reporting, do you report on a annual basis or on a quarterly basis?
So we report on an annual basis, and yes, we were close on the covenants, but we made both of them. So we have no covenant issues in our 2022 fiscal year audit. And actually the days cash on hand, moved up to 45 days and we hit that covenant. So, okay. So we were fine on the debt service coverage ratio. It needed to be 1.1. And we cleared that, but it was close. It was, I think, 1.17. And again, that's the trial of, you know, investing in growth, which right. We're very committed to here. And that costs money. But we're very cognizant of those covenants and watching them closely.
Good morning, Kevin.
Okay. And then the, you have, in addition to the bonds, you have, two additional, long-term, debts, as well. Those are, I think, like $3.8 million and another one, as well, at a significantly higher interest rate, I think around 12%. Right. And what's the plan to be able to carve those off so that you're not saddled with, you know, that kind of debt coverage?
Yeah. Thank you for that. Obviously that was sort of short-term working capital. Again, with the growth that we've had and the infrastructure issues. And the plan, we actually have an upcoming meeting with our current investors about some additional funding from them to sort of to clear those out. And I don't know, maybe let Mr. Tito address that, since I've been talking all the time, James. I don't know if you want to.
You're doing a great job explaining things. The 3.8 is a short-term one-year debt. And our plan is to we're working with our bond investors at the moment, and like President Munsell just mentioned, on Monday we have a conference call, and we've been working with the investment bankers, and we're preparing for a new bond offering to take out the higher interest debt, which is also going to include money for growth and some infrastructure that we need as well.
And I guess the big picture is, you know, we did an appraisal of the campus. It's now worth $95 million. For our 75 acres, the combination of the assets that we have and the growth trajectory that we're on and continue to be on, we have a lot of folks that want to help us grow to that next level, and that's our single-minded focus at this point.
Okay. Your enrollment has grown like maybe 5%, or like where do you see your enrollment growing? Is it, do you think that the new campus is, you know, sort of like, is, you know, like if you build it, they will come, you know, especially now that you have sports facilities?
Yeah, it's actually worked out that way. And that's what we started when we moved over, the year before we got here, we had about 600 campus students. This fall we were over 900, so 50% growth in just four years. And again, the very first year was the COVID year. And so spring of 20, COVID happens, the college fairs get shut down, we can't go visit high schools like we normally would with our recruiters. And yet we continue to grow through that. I think we grew 7% last year. The other thing, you know, if you look at our financials, you see that our online revenue is growing pretty dramatically, and that's under Mr. Tito's leadership, and with his business savvy, we're actually doing much better in that area, and now we'll be able to add grad students to that. But we projected we were over 1,000 students, I think 1,082 in the fall, including online, and our projections are over 1,200 for next fall. And 1,400 the year after that. And again, every indicator, those may, I think, even be modest, because every indicator that we're seeing from interest in the school as our visibility continues to grow and we rise in the rankings in U.S. News and World Report, On the other campus, when we didn't have a lot of amenities to offer, it was mainly student athletes and people that were drawn by our mission. And we're seeing now many more students. The biggest area of growth now is not athletics related. It's just college students who want to come and be a part of this community and everything that's going on here.
Okay.
So, yep.
And how about the, sorry to like, this is the finance committee, so I get, as long as I'm asking financial questions, I guess everything is fair. How about the interest rate swap? How is that affecting you? Because you have one of those, don't you have an interest rate swap? Or I might be thinking of a different school since
I don't think that's us, yeah.
Okay, good. And your academic and, well, your fiscal year, is it June 30th?
It's June 30th.
Okay. And where do you feel you are now? Because I think when we, the last unaudited financials we have are December 31st. I know that the last couple of years you had, in addition to things like PPP and the HERF funds, you also had the Hispanic serving institution $3 million from the government. And so where do you expect to end this fiscal year?
Yeah, we expect to finish the year strongly. The main variable at this point is fundraising. And, you know, since December, we've more than doubled. You know, the numbers are a lot higher now than they were even at the end of the year.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah, we have not historically been one of those that gets all of their giving at year end. Our biggest giving typically is in the spring. And this year's been no exception. We have some other major commitments that will come in before June 30th. So that's the main variable at this point. We did get the Hispanic Serving Institution designation from the Department of Ed. And then we were able to get our first grant under that. We actually are going to be applying for another similar one that we're confident we'll get. And that's a $3 million grant over 5 years. So the first $600,000 of that will be reflected in this year's totals.
Okay. And do you treat that the way you, from a GAAP standpoint, do you treat that the same way as a philanthropic gift where it all has to get recognized in the, at the time that it's issued, or if it's dispersed over a period of time, you can count it in increments?
That's actually a question we asked our auditors. And James, I'm not sure that we have an answer yet, or maybe we have an answer and it's.
They answered it. We recognize it as we draw it down. We can't recognize it all at once.
Okay. Well, that's better because you have work to do in the out years. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see. Any other questions for anybody else since I've been hogging the,
This is Scott Wallace.
Yep.
You refer to investors. What do you mean by that?
That's a good question. I was thinking that too.
These are the folks that, and James, you feel free to speak to this. This is our the folks that were involved in investing in us in the public bond offering that we did back in 2019. So our existing investors through a public bond, through the Arizona Industrial Development Authority.
So basically okay. your bank, in other words. So yeah. the bonds are issued, the bank buys the bonds, the bank lends you. With a spread on top of that. Okay.
I was looking. This is Scott Wallace again. I was looking at your liquidity footnote in your audited financial statements, and contributions receivable was a significant part of that. Insofar as your auditor signed off in February, about a month ago, I presume they had enough time and you. Would you comment on the collectability again of that, which I think is about $2.7 million?
Yeah, I think we're confident in our ability to collect on all of the. I mean, we do the analysis every year in terms of numbers. So, in reaffirmations, if they're philanthropic pledges, they essentially. For our auditors reaffirm their commitment to fulfill. Many of them are getting paid on year by year. I think I referenced that too, because one of the things that won't show up in this year's P&L is, you know, significant gifts that were pledged in previous years that actually come in as cash this year.
Okay.
And James, did you want to comment on that at all?
Yeah, other than, you know, in this past audit, which was my first full audit that I've been here for, the auditors sent letters out to each individual or organization, and they contacted them by phone, and then they had to sign off and receive the signatories before they would include it in the audited statement, confirming that those are still good contributions.
And I'm not sure, Mr. Wallace, but it's possible too that there was a in one of those categories, the that tax credit, the elusive tax credit that just virtually every higher education institution qualified for and is waiting to receive from the IRS is, I think, might be reflected in that as well.
Yeah, probably. Your deferred revenue as of June 21 is substantially less than June 2020. When I say substantially more than $1 million, what changed? Was it a billing issue, a collection issue, a pandemic issue? Because I usually look at deferred. I like to look at deferred revenue. That's like backlog of revenue.
James, do you want to speak? I'm not sure the answer to that.
Going back into 2020, I'm not that familiar with that. I would have to dig into that a little bit more.
Okay.
Is that the category of like payments that are owed from students, or?
No, there's a category where students that have paid you money or committed to pay you money and for a future class or semester or food service or whatever the heck it is. And so you show it as a liability because you have to deliver those classes. And food service is a huge number. But anyway.
It is a huge number. Well, one of the things with coming to the new campus was, we were capped at about 200 students that could live on campus where we were. And here, without building anything, we've got a capacity for up to 700. And we're at 550 this year. So the costs went up, but also the revenues from room and board are helpful to the school.
Okay. All righty. Well, I mean, if I would be interested, and I'm not going to put you on the spot to do exhaustive research, but I would like to see a follow-up on that.
We can get an answer on that.
Okay. In other words, why is
20, why is the change
21 or 20? Two. Wait a minute. Maybe I made a mistake myself. Not myself. Not that you made a mistake. No, I take that back. It is less than the previous year, but not dramatic. Going back into 2020, yeah, it was a big number, but let's just let that fade. And so it's just down a little bit. So never mind.
And I have one last question. President Munsell, could you mentioned the IRS tax credit. What are you talking about?
That's the employee retention tax credit, the ERTC. And it's sort of the last of the COVID era relief that was provided for businesses. It's not just a higher education thing. But our auditors went through the process of evaluating. Yeah, we're one of those institutions that didn't do layoffs during COVID and maintained our workforce. And we qualify for about $2.2 million in reimbursement from the IRS for taxes for employees that we kept working. And, it's one of those things that they determined we qualified. They submitted the application for it. They said it typically takes 9 months, but I've been talking to other university presidents that are in the same position, and some of them have received partial payment, but very few have received it. It's unclear when we're actually going to get the money, but it is coming.
Hopefully before June 30th.
Unless the government runs out of money, which is always a threat, I think. So.
Okay. All right. Well, unless there are any other questions, I will make a motion. I'm going to make a motion to approve the regular degree granting license, maintain the $300,000 bond, and continue to provide digital student records on a semester basis and quarterly reporting. Can I get a second, please?
Scott Wallace, I'll second that.
Okay. President Munsell, do you agree to the stipulations?
Absolutely. Thank you.
Then let's vote.
Dr. Mittman.
I vote aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Mr. Ball.
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Mr. Wallace.
Aye.
Mr. Wallace votes aye. By your vote of three ayes, no nays, that motion passes.
All right. There we go.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, Huntington University.
Hello.
Hi, Ms. Bonner. Do you care to make an opening statement?
Yes. Thank you. We're pleased to say that our Arizona campus has maintained our 154 enrolled undergraduate students, is consistent with where we were at last fall. We also have, as of our report in November, had 27 graduate students in our OTD program. And in this January, we added 11 more students in our third cohort. Our OTD program will be graduating the first class in summer of 2023. The other good news with our OTD program is that we received full accreditation status from the Accreditation Council for Occupational Therapy Education with the maximum number of years, which is 7 years of accreditation. And we feel like that receiving that accreditation status will facilitate our growth in enrollment and help us to build some classes that are a little larger than what we've done to date. So we're looking forward to that. We also some good news with our digital media arts program. We're really pleased with some of the results that they've had and some competitions that they've been in. In fall of 2020, we had our largest incoming group of the degree-seeking students. And we also are ahead in our admits and our deposit for this next fall. So we're looking forward to that, seeing more growth there. Our HUAZ animation students won 4 of the 8 possible animation awards at the National BEA Festival of Media Arts last month. And that involves over 400 public and private universities around the country. So we were very proud of our students to have done so well there. 3 of the 4 animated projects that won were led by Peoria Unified School District grads. So HUAZ is definitely retaining and developing local talent, which is part of our mission. HUAZ Film Productions won the Best Director, Best Cinematography, and Best Picture at the Rocky Mountain Emmy Awards, in addition to HUAZ winning the Best Animated Production last November. So we are really encouraged by what our students are producing and what's coming of that. We also are excited about some partnerships that we're exploring in Arizona and looking to possibly partner with other institutions of higher ed in Arizona, sharing some programs. So we're just doing the groundwork on that and really looking forward to expanding our reach through that. And then finally, just for you to know, in Huntington, and in the Indiana campus, we do have some new programs going there that are going to be starting in the fall of 2023 that we're excited about. And one of them is an accelerated Bachelor of Science degree in nursing. And the other one is veterinary nursing that we're partnering with Purdue University to do that. So one of the focuses for us in our growth is really these partnerships and how can we partner with other institutions. We're looking at doing that in Arizona as well as handling that here in Indiana. So that would be my opening remarks. Thank you for the time, and I'm ready to answer questions.
Great. And Jeff, even though we know that you're part of the institution, the HU behind you is proof positive. I assume that had nothing to do with the graphic arts competition.
It did not. That's more my wife's decorative competition, but she wins those Dr. Mittman with regularity. So they get a little reversed back. So that's a good catch all around.
Okay. All right. Well, as I've already demonstrated, I lost my notes, which is really a bummer because I don't know about my colleagues here, but this is like 4 hours of like going through all the materials and creating a Word document, and like I don't know where it is. And so I'm going to rely on my colleagues, but I'll just start it off. And I know that you had, you know, since this is the Finance Committee, and as much as we appreciate all of the good things that are going on, you did have a loss last year, and it's like you're headed, well, at least, you know, through the unaudited financials this year, also, you know, in the red. You kind of got slaughtered in the stock market last year, which everybody did. But I guess you have a nice size endowment, and so yours was a pretty big hit. I think over $3 million. Where did that leave your composite score last year? Because I didn't see it in the audit, and I think you must be the university that has the interest rate swap. If not, I'll just keep asking every school that.
No, we do.
Because I know it's such a weird thing. You know, when interest rates go up, it's kind of counterintuitive. And so I'll rely on my CPA colleagues on the board if we get stuck in that. But I guess the question is, you know, where do you figure to end this year? Where does that leave you with the Department of Ed per your composite score from last year, with interest rates, you know, so much higher than a year ago, is that a beneficial effect on the interest rate swap, or is it going to have a negative effect on the interest rate swap?
Okay, thank you. To answer the question of where we think we'll be this year, obviously the market is not helping me right now, and I'm not going to predict what the market looks like on May 31st. So at this point, we are definitely showing market losses with relationships to our investments. With relationship to the swap, that's a positive. Yeah, our swap is flipping. So if my swap was larger, it might offset some of my market losses, but it's not as large as my endowment, which is probably a blessing. But so the swap is a positive thing. As interest rates go up,
good,
in a better position. I do anticipate a loss though at the end of the year, thanks to the market. If we don't see a switch for that, a change for that.
Okay. Yeah. And then do you have your composite score from last year?
Yes, it was 2.0.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you have, especially with the size of your endowment, you've got plenty of room.
Yes, and I do not anticipate a problem with it this year. Right now, we have, as we look toward the end of the year, we're estimating it should be around 1.8.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. That's all I can remember.
Okay.
Scott or Mr. Wallace or Mr. Ball?
This is Scott Wallace. In terms of your Board of Trustees, are any of those associated with the Peoria campus or the Arizona operation?
We do not. I guess it's hard to say if they're associated. We do have some board members that do live in Arizona in the summer and or in the winter. Sorry, not the summer.
Yeah, hopefully
they're wiser than that. But Scott, we do not have any board member that resides in Arizona right now that I'm aware of.
Okay. And I noticed that your endowment fund as of August was 32 million or some number like that. So yeah. you got some got some cushion, and your net assets look strong. Your debt to equity is looking good. So I don't have any further questions.
Okay.
I have no questions here, Doug Ball.
Okay. Well, let's see. Hold on. So hearing no further questions, I will make a motion to approve the regular degree granting license, maintain the $104,946 bond, and maintain quarterly reporting. Can I get a second?
Second that, Scott Wallace.
Okay. Ms. Bonner, do you agree to those stipulations?
Yes, we do.
Okay. In that case, it's over to you, Mr. LaMountain.
Dr. Mittman.
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Mr. Ball?
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Mr. Wallace?
Aye.
Mr. Wallace votes aye. By your vote of three ayes, no nays, that motion passes.
All right. Well, best wishes, you guys. And we'll see you next time.
Sounds good. Thank you, Dr. Mittman.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. The school formerly known as Wizards, but now LifeWork Education. Come on down. Who do we have?
Good morning. I clicked on the camera button, but I don't see my camera turning on yet. But this is Andrew Johnston, the regional director. Dr. Mittman, Director Lamont, it's always nice to see everybody. Joining me on the call is our Vice President of Operations, Elizabeth Salvaterra, and our Director of Finance, Dennis O'Neill. So we're here today, and we appreciate the time. We've had a lot of positive developments, especially in the second half of last year, that's going to carry over into this year and hopefully provide the kind of swing back to the positive financials and everything that we had in prior years before coming to you.
Care to elaborate on some of the drivers of the positive changes?
Absolutely. So one of the largest ones is our partnership with AMR Ambulance for the paramedic program. They've just had a crippling staffing problem throughout the pandemic and post-pandemic now, as a lot of turnover in staffing has resulted in a lot of their paramedics leaving to contract jobs out of state. So we've partnered with them. That started just back in August last year. And so a lot of the carryover of that kind of revenue impact and everything is going to be seen this year and not last year. But with that, that's a partnership with them at all of their operations. But the main ones are the rural communities that don't have access to kind of subsequent paramedic program availability for their currently employed EMTs. So we're working with them out at their Lake Havasu operation, as well as up in Prescott. And then their Payson AMR operation is actually sliding over some of their staffing over to Prescott as well to complete the paramedic program. So that one is kind of the largest one that's been working for us so far. And just a kind of enrollment comparison of the effects of last year versus this year. I believe it was in February of last year, we started a class of four paramedic students, which was our ability to kind of go back and work with some students that were significantly impacted by COVID. We got the approval from the state EMS office to help those students out. So we started four students February last year. We started 25 paramedic students February this year. So a significant swing. About half of those students came from the AMR partnership as well. Outside of that, the other positive one is our working relationship with the Arizona Healthcare Association, which was, for the CNA and caregiver training, historically ran by our legacy name, Arizona Medical Training Institute, on that side, which is now our Country Club campus. So we've been working with them to similarly deliver on a big grant issued by the state and signed by the governor for bolstering CNAs and caregivers entering the workforce in the next, 2 years at the time of the signing of it, about another year and a half for the target goal for that. So that's been the two biggest developments for us. And the, like I said, about the second half of last year is when these really started coming together.
Great. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Mr. Wallace, Mr. Ball. Questions?
No questions from me, Doug Ball.
I don't have any. Well, I have one question in our packet. It looks like you have about four campuses. Do I understand that you have about four campuses in Phoenix, the Phoenix area, Arizona?
Yeah, we have the Wizard Education brand that was the first to kind of go through the change to LifeWork Education is in Peoria. And then we had two other licensed schools that were all operating independently previously that are all coming together under the umbrella of LifeWork Education is the two in Mesa, previously called Arizona Academy of Emergency Services and the Arizona Medical Training Institute.
Did you acquire those or did you start those operations?
It's been under the same ownership. There's ownership changeover a few years back that resulted in everything no longer being separate legal entities and being all one legal entity called LifeWork Education. And then it was an acquisition of the former Wizard Education in Peoria that took place in January of 2021. But the Mesa campuses, those were under the same ownership, just a restructuring on the ownership side a few years back now.
Okay, and you're headquartered in Ohio, as I read
That's
the
correct.
Financial statements. And you have operations in Ohio, do you?
That is just the corporate office of Frank Swager, the CEO, and some of the other board members and everybody. We have non-vocational continuing education operations here in Arizona, as well as California, Washington, and Florida.
Okay. All righty. And then the large amount of goodwill that you have in your financial statements, how did that arise and what's it associated with?
Dennis, I may actually kind of kick that over to you if you can help out on that one.
Yep. Yeah, the goodwill is associated with the acquisition of all these separate legal entities and consolidating that under one legal entity. So that's the difference in the purchase price and the financials.
Okay. So those entities that you referred to before, or maybe even other states and so forth, it relates to those particular operations.
Yep.
And, okay. And I see where, I think I see where they, at least management has reviewed and the auditors have reviewed or looked at or audited in connection with their work, the, any impairment of that goodwill. So there's no impairment of goodwill as at this point in time in your,
There's not. And we also did the election for the private companies to amortize the goodwill over 10 years.
Okay. All righty. Yeah. For my fellow committee members, the original goodwill is 6.9 million and a million has been amortized. So that's the 5.8. Okay. I'm good. With questions.
Thank you. All right. Hearing no more questions, I will make a motion to approve the regular vocational and degree granting license, maintain $114,464 surety bond, and continue quarterly reporting. Can I get a second?
This is Doug. I'll second it.
Thank you. And do you, Mr. Johnson, agree to the stipulations?
We do.
All right. Let's vote.
Dr. Mittman.
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Mr. Ball.
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Mr. Wallace.
Aye.
Mr. Wallace votes aye. Three ayes, no nays. That motion passes.
All right. Well, congratulations and best wishes for a good rest of this fiscal year.
Thank you very much, everybody.
The School of Architecture, like the Ohio State University.
Yes, and we chose that specifically. The School of Architecture. Yes.
Okay.
Yes, and you know, I hate to say this and start like this, but we're going to have to remove that logo because we've been told we can't say Frank, founded by Frank Lloyd Wright. Shocking, I know, but we are the School of Architecture, and we were founded by Frank Lloyd Wright. We're the only school founded by Frank Lloyd Wright. So,
is that the whole update?
No, no, it is not. We have actually a lot of positive things to talk about, despite the last few years.
It's funny, everybody always has a lot of positive things to talk about.
We do, you know, when you
if I were, you know, coming in front of the board, that's exactly the approach that I would take too.
Yes, yes. Well, coming from where we came from, which is basically starting over, we have, you know.
Yeah. Well, it was really a delight to read your materials, and so go ahead and blow us away.
I'm glad. It was delightful. It is a really delightful time at the school. We have been starting over, but despite everything that's gone on, we have had two consecutive years of profitability for the fiscal year end 2022 and 2021, which we are very happy about. We are currently in the process of our NAB accreditation renewal. And the review with the NAB team will be in April. We renewed our accreditation with HLC in 2021 after their comprehensive review and site visit at our ARCO Santee and COSANTEE campuses. And our last composite index score was 2.47. So with our campuses in that issue settled, we are actually even looking now to expand them to some new sites. There's a lot of interest in arts compounds and architecture firms with excess space to host our school. So we're seeking opportunities to continue to grow our school, expand our facilities, and actually increase our revenue streams as well. We are a niche school. We only offer Masters of Architecture programs and our 8-week immersion programs. It had been negatively impacted by the change in campuses and that instability in the pandemic. But we have reestablished our reputation for stability, and we've been in our campuses a few years already, and our student work has actually been publicized. We're so proud of this, and some of the most prestigious publications in the world. And that has increased our admissions inquiries and our applications tremendously. And again, we are a small school. We'll probably grow at this point to a maximum of 35 students. Could be more. But our current plan is that over the next 5 years, we have had already and are very creative. Students typically are late appliers and late enrollers, but we have already had 8 students enroll for the fall semester. And for that, for us, in our size, that is a lot of growth. We do have excess capacity, so any in our faculty, so any growth in enrollment pretty much flows straight to the bottom line. So that has been amazing. With the impacts of the pandemic subsiding, because we used to have a large contingent of international students, our international enrollment grew just this week. We were contacted by our former partner school in Taiwan about our summer immersion program. We had been forecasting 4 participants. We can now anticipate that they want to send 15 to 20 students. So the lid has been lifted, and our partner schools are looking to go international again, particularly in Taiwan, and they were a big source of students for us. That school also used to send us fall semester students in the past. So, you know, as of last week, we anticipate that we'll have even more growth in our enrollment from the Taiwan school as well. So We're also seeking to add new revenue streams. We were approved by HLC to add a new master's program, the Master's of Science in Architecture, and that is a 1.5-year program designed for experienced professionals. And we are submitting our application to you guys this week. We're also applying with HLC to get approval to offer distance education. And we think that could be a huge source of revenue growth for the school without really having to increase facilities or expense of that. So we know that ASU has around 1,000 architecture students, and most of those students are online. So that tells us that is a big source of revenue for our school as well, potentially, as students, particularly these days, are seeking to find economical sources for their degrees as possible. But we will continue to, we're envisioning something of having a residency on our campuses and continuing our design build model. So it will not be 100%. They will have to visit our campuses and they will have to build something. We're also growing our revenue with architectural projects. And this year we have $53,000 in revenue earned from our architectural projects. And we are currently partnering with ASU and the Mayo Clinic to do a design. They want a Frank Lloyd Wright inspired design for their new Health Futures campus that is in development. And right now we're putting together a proposal for a $200,000 design, but we believe that that can actually grow. And it's also my understanding from the distance past that the architectural projects were so lucrative that the school didn't need to do any fundraising at all. So I'm really excited about that avenue for growth. So that's the revenue of the model that this school continues to create. We've been focusing on enrollment. That's our mission. We have continue to have a very strong base of supporters and donors that surprise me annually. And while we don't depend on or focus on or even forecast our donors, we are very grateful to our dedicated alumni that do support us as we are celebrating our 91st year in business.
Great. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Questions, Mr. Wallace or Mr. Ball? I can start us off if you'd like. Looks like you're so far for this fiscal year, you're looking at about a $300,000 loss. And so where do you see the year ending?
With our surprise enrollment, and really what I focus in on is cash, with our surprise enrollment from the from Taiwan summer immersion program, that is going to be around $60,000 in revenue. And then I was also informed last night that our new board chair, who is also used to be the development director for the school, is organizing a $100,000 fundraiser for the school. So I anticipate ending the school $160,000 at least more profitable.
And so that would take down your shortfall to about $160,000.
It would. And then with next year's enrollment, we already have 8 people that have been applied and accepted, and that was the maximum. And we actually have more applications for next year as well. So next year we do anticipate profitability. It's just this year, we've been, as a leadership team, focusing on the school and the programming we had in the past, and we had to focus on donors and fundraising and development. And this year we're really just focusing on programming. So I haven't really been forecasting any of that or working through any of that. But this year our programming and our enrollment has been our focus, and we really are starting to see dividends with that in our applications for next year. and how we see that growing in the subsequent years. And I think it's actually going to exceed what I had been initially forecasting. I mean, obviously, I think we'll have at least 4 more students from Taiwan in the fall semester. We're going to be resuming, repricing and resuming our Kane University in New Jersey program. And we anticipate that we're going to have more students in that as well. So we have a lot of things popping up, as you know, with the small school. Things pop up relatively quickly, and especially for our very dramatic school. So I think our growth is actually going to be more than anticipated. And again, I never know where these donations are going to come from and from who, but they always seem to, as my mom used to say, providence, be providence with this school, and they come out of the sky and into our lap. But with that, even if we do have a negative income year, we are going to have positive income next year. And our bank, JP Morgan Chase, increased our line of credit back in October from $250,000 to $300,000. And we are more than adequately funded with our cash to get through that short Ellen.
Right. In the 2 previous years, it looks like contributions and grants were $422,000 and $482,000.
Yes.
Was that fundraising, or are those grants, or those other kinds of grants or other types of earned income?
It was both. We had around $700,000 in grants from the COVID pandemic. And we've had I can't remember off the top of my head about our fundraising, but we've had tremendous amount of support from our very successful alumni seeking to keep the school supported through those times.
Yeah, you had from the PPP loan, you had $123,000, but under contributions and grants, you had $422,000, mm-hmm, and $480,000. So I'm assuming that the $400,000 is fundraising, right?
Yes.
Okay. I have to say, and I've probably said this before, and you know, it's like, it's free advice, but since I'm the chair of the board, I get to like give advice, and whether you feel like listening to it or not is up to you. You know, that's probably 75% of what your total tuition is. And I would say, you know, I can't think of many schools that have a better story than yours. I don't know if you're allowed to, are you allowed to say the words Frank Lloyd Wright? Or are you like,
we can whisper them.
Like, as long as it's not like on your logo. I mean, if you could, I assume that you could tell it as part of the story or something like that. And I would say, you know, and this is really, you know, this is a conversation for you to have with your board, because we've talked about your board in previous years. You know, I mean, with all the focus and increases in enrollment and tuition revenue, just imagine what like an extra $500,000 would do for, you know, for the institution, but also I imagine for you and your leadership team, for your stress levels. I mean, seriously, because I know, you know, as small schools, you know, it's, you know, the margin of error between, you know, X number of students or X minus, you know, a handful of students matriculating is really big. So that's just for whatever it's worth, you know, I would, you know, that's my 2 cents.
No, we greatly appreciate your advice, and we always take it to heart. Our board, yeah, with our former development director being our board chair now, has taken that role for us. I actually find focusing on program revenue, because I have a tremendous amount of confidence in our marketing. I know we have excess capacity, and I know, you know, just a few losses in students can hurt a lot, but some gains in students does a tremendous amount of good for the school. So while our board is focusing on those efforts in making board level asks, we're able to devote our time to the programming in the school.
Okay, great. Other questions, Messrs. Wallace and Ball?
I do not have any questions. This is Scott Wallace.
I just have one question, I guess. Looking at your projections, I guess you have enough faculty capacity to handle the increase in enrollments, because I notice your payroll costs are not going up at all in relationship to your projected growth.
Right. Not at all. I mean, right now our student to faculty ratio is about, you know, 4 to 1, in some places 1 to 2. So we have a lot of excess capacity, and no, we don't really need to hire any additional faculty. And we also rely on a lot of adjunct faculty, and a lot of this adjunct faculty has been with the school for a long time. And at the end of the day, and we have one right now, they just donate their salary to the school.
Thank you. No other questions for me.
Okay. Just on the fundraising, it won't affect your bottom line, because there would be a corresponding expense for an in-kind donation. But I would call that out because that's part of your story. You know, the faculty who are donating, their time, they're essentially volunteers. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so I'm going to make a motion, and I'm going to make a motion to approve the regular degree granting license to maintain the $15,000 bond. And I'm going to recommend that we remove the School of Architecture from quarterly reporting I'll say that's the motion. Can I get a second, and then we can discuss it a little bit more?
This is Doug. I'll second it.
Okay, so we have a second. And I think the reason for that is that, you know, I think having been through what you've been through the last 3 years, you know, I don't know, I had when I was in a doctoral program in higher ed, one of the instructors was, one of the courses was on small institutions, of which I'm also a member. And the instructor said, small colleges are like cockroaches. You can't kill them. And unfortunately, that's not always true. But, you know, my sense, you know, from the sense of purpose and commitment that you have, and also the size, is manageable, that I think you guys are going to be around. Plus, our staff will continue to monitor your finances. And as we said from the beginning, the last time we met was in June, so quarterly reporting isn't the same as it was last year. So at any rate, if you guys are okay, Mr. Wallace, Mr. Ball, you guys good with going off of quarterly reporting at this time, and with the provision that, you know, they can go back on if things change?
This is Doug. I'm okay with it.
I'm good with that.
Okay. And Ms. Hollenbeck, you're good with that and maintaining the surety bond?
Yes. Thank you so much.
Let's vote.
Dr. Mittman.
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Mr. Ball.
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Mr. Wallace?
Aye.
Mr. Wallace votes aye. Vote of 3 ayes, no nays. That motion carries.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. And we wear our cockroach status with pride.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have nothing against cockroaches.
Personally. Thank you.
All right. Next up. UTI, MMI, bring it on.
Okay, I guess I'll just jump right into it. Hi, I'm Troy Anderson, Executive Vice President, Chief Financial Officer. I just have a few brief comments and then can open up the questions, any that you have. Had the pleasure of presenting to the board the past few years. To sum it up, fiscal 2022 was a good year for UTI overall and for our Arizona UTI and MMI schools. Total company level, we grew revenue 25% year over year to $418 million, driven primarily by organic growth, as well as the acquisition of the MIT College of Technology, which was completed in November of 2021. On the net income side, we delivered approximately $26 million for the year, which was our third straight year of positive net income after several years of losses. Our calculated composite score was 2.3. Our Arizona UTI and MMI schools also showed year-over-year revenue growth and increased profitability. In the cases of MMI, a smaller loss, but still a measurable improvement year-over-year. UTI grew average students while MMI held roughly flat. And in June of 2022, we successfully completed the consolidation of the MMI campus into the Avondale location and made a pretty substantial investment there. All the while continuing to deliver strong student outcomes in terms of completion and employment and high overall student satisfaction. UTI continues to focus on growth and diversification as a company. In addition to completing the MIT acquisition and integration, we launched two new campuses in 2022, one in Texas and one in Florida, and two new welding programs. We're currently executing on a plan to launch 15 new programs across 9 campuses, primarily as a function of the MIT acquisition, taking those programs more broadly across our campus footprint. And those are expected to be completed over 2023 and 2024. And this includes at Avondale, where we're planning to launch our aviation program by the end of our fiscal year. And lastly, UTI continues to look at acquisitions as a way to serve more students and to grow and diversify the company. In December 2022, we acquired Concord Career Colleges, which has 17 campuses in 8 states, serving approximately 8,000 students across over 20 programs in the entry-level healthcare arena, which is we see as a great opportunity overall and a complement to the existing UTI transportation and skilled trades offerings. So in closing, UTI is a very healthy, growing, and profitable institution with a strong balance sheet and is executing on a clear strategy geared towards helping to solve the significant and growing skills gaps for in-demand fields. We've moved past our woes of years past and thus are respectfully requesting that the board, in addition to renewing our license, eliminate the reporting requirements that were rightfully imposed a number of years ago and are also requesting cancellation of the bond requirement. Thank you for your consideration, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Spoken like a true CFO. You're not going to tell us about any awards or any other projects that your students have done.
No, I have no student. I didn't bring any students with me to represent us. No.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Mr. Ball or Mr. Wallace, questions?
Yeah, this is Scott Wallace. Looking at your balance sheet, the negative amount in the equity section of the balance sheet that says intercompany, and this might be just for your Arizona operations, but can you explain that to me?
Which page in the package are you looking
at?
Or give me a page title, maybe.
Well, it says here, Universal Technical Institute, period balance sheet, December 31st, 2022, Reg AZ, UTI, Avondale, and Corp.
Got it. Okay.
Page 15.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I was on 35, so I way overshot there. Let me look at that. And that, I think you're going to be right that is tied to just because of how we do our at the entity level. You know, each school is essentially an operating legal entity, and then all of that gets consolidated at the corporate level. I don't know specifically what that account represents. I mean, obviously the overall equity is very positive. So I can do a quick follow up and shoot an email through our representatives here and get you all a better answer.
Yeah, it may be some sort of dividend or sharing of profits or something like that. I bet. Yep. And again, so what you're saying, what I understand, this is just a division or some, yeah, division balance sheet.
This December 30, this must be UTI. I apologize, gentlemen, for not having a better answer here, but this is definitely not the total company. So this must just be UTI only. Is what this represents, yeah.
So there's other entities like that, MIAC and things like yeah. that. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Okay. All right.
And as of December 31, Concord, we have a Concord balance sheet. And so there's our total assets are $700 million as of December 31.
All righty. Okay. That's the question I had on the balance sheet.
And for the Concord acquisition, do you expect to see either an increase or a decrease in net revenue for that acquisition the fiscal year?
Yeah. So we, as I said, we did $418 million in 22. Our guidance, public company, we have guidance out there in the investment community is $595 to $610 million with about a 170 to 175 of that coming from Concord. There, of course, we only have 10 months of the year. They generated approximately $200 million in revenue for the trailing 12-month period ending 9/30/22. And they've been growing pretty consistently in the, you know, call it mid to upper single digit range.
Okay. You had a few years ago, your school engaged, I think it was McKinsey, for a consulting project. I think, I can't remember how long, you know, they were there. I remember you terminated a little bit early. Was this part of the strategy that came out of that engagement, or is this something that, you know, is more recent or just, you know, kind of a post-COVID, or I shouldn't jinx it by saying post-COVID.
Yeah, right.
You know, change in strategy.
Sure. So when the company was on the downward trajectory for that extended period of time from 2011 to 2018, I'm sure you know the details of, you know, Coliseum Cattle put an investment in 2016, then brought in some new management. Jerome Grant, who's now our CEO, came in as COO. And at that time, I believe that's when they hired McKinsey. So 2017, 2018 timeframe. I joined in 2019, September 2019. They were already gone at that point. But that the focus there was to help reorganize the business to look at our marketing.
So it didn't have anything to do with you know, pursuing like a strategic growth roadmap.
No. It was more. It was reestablishing growth in the current format, including programs and campuses, and then subsequent to that, with the new leadership, myself, Jerome, others. When Jerome took over as CEO, we then embarked on a new strategy around growth and diversification, which has led us to where we are now.
Sounds good. All right. Any other questions, Mr. Ball, Mr. Wallace? Hearing none, I will make a motion to approve the regular vocational and degree granting license for both Universal Technical Institute and Motorcycle Maintenance Institute to reduce the bond to $15,000 and to remove from financial reporting. Can I get a motion? Can I get a second?
I'll second that. This is Scott Wallace.
Okay. Mr. Anderson or Ms. Allen, do you agree to that stipulation?
Do you agree, Crystal?
I sure do. Thank you.
Okay, well, then I agree.
Yeah, I figured you would. I figured you would since that's what you asked for. With that, let's vote.
Dr. Mittman?
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Mr. Ball?
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Mr. Wallace?
Aye.
Mr. Wallace votes aye. Three ayes, no nays. That motion passes.
There we go.
Great. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye. All right, next up, the Arizona Heart Foundation. I don't know if you guys were here for the.
We're not the, we're just Arizona Heart Foundation, yeah.
I know. Well, it's nice to see you, Mr. Kerrigan. And I'm not sure if Paula is here, but do you have an opening?
She had to leave town unexpectedly, so she won't be on today.
So we're in your, the school is in your trusted hands.
It is, yeah.
You care to make an opening statement?
I feel like I'm here today just to reassure you that as we look to get off of financial reporting, that we're never going to head back into the red. I shouldn't say never, but I think you see with the numbers we've reported just for the first two quarters of this fiscal year, that we continue to do good things over here. The cardiac program is still exploding. We get triple the applicants versus the number of seats every 6 months. And I think the real big icing on the cake was we had Abhas come in here in October. They only came up with one finding, which we were able to cure within the 45-day period. And after their vote in January, we just got the letter saying that we got the maximum six-year reaccreditation. So things are going really well over here. You know, I would say if we didn't even do anything other than what we're doing right now, which is matriculating 60 students through the program every year, you know, with a break even of 45 to 50 students right now, we would continue to report, you know, profitability from this point forward. But we're going to look at other growth opportunities such as expansion into Tucson and programmatic accreditation as well. So that's kind of where we're headed and where we're at.
All right. Questions? That means I'm asking Mr. Ball and Mr. Wallace, do you have questions?
I don't have any questions.
None for me.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, first of all, congratulations on the last couple of years. It's been really a great turnaround. And I know I haven't seen it, but I know your new facility is supposed to be beautiful. Your old facility was nice, but it was very expensive. One question though, it's interesting because I just got, and I'm looking around for it, I got in the mail, you know, I can't remember the name of the company, but to get my, you know, to get my carotid ultrasound, to check out, you know, my vascular health. And yet, you know, your experience is that the cardiac ultrasound is going gangbusters, but the carotid ultrasound is not, you don't see the same market for it, at least from a student standpoint.
Yeah, I'm not sure what's going on there. We were typically enrolling 12 to 15 in the vascular program going back to when we slid them off in 2018. It just seems like the echocardiography is just so much, I don't know, sexier for lack of a better word. I just don't know what's going on there. So we're going to take a look at the vascular program, possibly look to do more of a general program with a vascular component. And that way we can also try to help alleviate the wait times at the community colleges and get more students rolling through and getting out in the workforce. So, we got some very strong people in the vascular space consulting with us right now to figure out, you know, how we can move ahead and possibly make some changes to that program.
Okay. And then the other
thing I should mention, Dr. Mimmon, is, you know, you tipped us off a few years ago where we just kind of been waiting for things to settle down here in the new office, but we have started the initial application to open up our own clinic. So it would be a separate organization, but we would, you know, cash pay clinic. We actually have 4,000 square feet right across the hall from us that's not in use right now. That would be perfect for the clinic space. But we also have two private exam rooms where we're at. We could use that in the interim, but that would help our students as far as clinical outlets, clinical sites, and help us get our initiative out for more of these screenings, like you just mentioned, seeing that through Life Touch or Life Scan or whatever. So
something.
get some doctors' referrals and get some people coming in here and utilizing the school and the students to a greater capacity.
Great. Okay. Well, hearing no other questions, I am going to motion to remove Arizona Heart Foundation School of Cardiac and Vascular Ultrasound from financial reporting and lower the bond to $15,000. Can I get a second?
Scott Wallace, second.
Okay. Mr. Kerrigan, do you agree? Do you agree to that onerous stipulation?
We agree. Thank you so much.
Yeah, for sure. Well, it's up to you, Mr. LaMountain.
Dr. Mittman.
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Mr. Ball.
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Mr. Wallace.
Aye.
Mr. Wallace votes aye. By the vote of three ayes, no nays, that motion passes.
Great. Well, congratulations on all the good work. And please send our regards to Ms. Banahan, and I hope she's well.
I will. Thank you all so much.
All right. Next up, ASIS, Arizona School of Integrative Studies.
Good morning. This is Laura Todd. We also have, of course, Shannon Yerkick, our CEO, participating. We have Patrick Comstock. He is our compliance director. And then we have Damian Archambault, who is our corporate controller as well on the call today.
Great.
Yeah. So
is there anything else you want to tell us?
Yes, yes, there's a lot we want to tell you, Paul. So we are really excited to share that as you've reviewed our documentation, but our audit and reset documentation shows 2 years of profitability for both ASIS and the True Mantra company. We currently have over $500,000 in reserves. We're off all financial reporting with the Department of Education. Our composite score has increased to 2.6. We are in great standing with our creditor Compta. And we just found out yesterday that our school system, our four little schools in Arizona, have been nominated for Education Excellence Award by Massage Envy. It's a national award that they'll actually be flying our director of education to Denver to accept later in the year. So we're really proud of that. We still have our 7-year accreditation with Compta. And we're just here to, you know, field any questions, but request that we're off of financial reporting with the Arizona Post-Secondary Board and a reduction or elimination of our surety bond.
Is that it?
We will miss talking to you guys on a quarterly basis.
In all joking aside, congratulations. You've had quite the turnaround over the last more than 2 years because it took a while to kind of turn the ship around even before, you know, the last two profitable years. Any questions, Mr. Wallace, Mr. Ball?
Yes, I have a question. I'm looking at your, just for clarification purposes, it's your balance sheet as of January 31st, 2023. And there's an amount due from the parent for $330,000. Do I read that right? Or?
Yeah, I'll turn that one over to Shannon and Damian to respond to.
All righty.
Damian, you want to jump in?
Yeah, give me a second. I'm trying to locate. And you said it was on the balance sheet for ASIS?
Well, let me see what it says here. There's a Excel spreadsheet we have. It says quarterly financial reporting, ASIS. Yes, okay. It says school address Tucson. That means anything to you in answering the question. Item number 39, but it's line 101, says due to from parent, but it's in brackets, which would suggest that this entity is owed $330,000, I think.
Right, I'm seeing it now. I would have to review in greater detail, give you more accurate information, but only due to's and due from's from our parent company are just when we move money back and forth intercompany.
Okay. I'm not asking for details behind the transactions and so forth. So there is a parent company, and in this particular case, this entity that I'm looking at is owed $330,000 from the parent company. That's what I'm just trying to clarify. There's a significant portion of your equity. So go ahead.
Damien, are they looking at the Bento transactions or?
I'm thinking that that might be what it's tied to, but again, I'd have to review in more detail in order to make a more of a definitive comment on it.
Okay, well, I mean, that's a significant amount. Who is the parent? Tell me that.
That'd be the True Mantra Education Group.
Okay. And do we have financial statements on them in this hacket?
Yes, there should be.
Yeah, this has been a recurring theme on previous calls too, Mr. Wallace, that there seems to be a confusion about parent versus ASIS. We've gone through the explanation a few times, but I know you guys deal with a lot of people. So we want to make sure that we answer any questions that you have about that to kind of make sure that there's a clear understanding of that.
Okay. Hang on a second here. Then I found the parent company here. Okay. So the parent company has, as of that date, $850,000 of equity. I wish I could give you a page number on that, but I can't.
Correct. I see it. I'm looking at the same file.
So they have $850,000 of shareholders' equity. Okay. And so that's what I'm probably more – that probably answers or satisfies my curiosity as much as anything. So I don't know that I need a follow up. I needed to have some confidence that there were resources out there that could enable this entity in Tucson to cash flow if needed. Okay.
Yes.
All right. So there's other entities outside of out of that that are part of this consolidated entity or combined entity, as the case may be. True Mantra. Well, that's in Tucson too. So, okay. I'm good. No further questions. I think I figured it out with,
thank you.
Thanks for that question.
Dr. Mittman,
are there any other questions?
Yeah. Are there any other questions, Mr. Ball? If not, I will make a motion to remove from financial reporting and lower the bond to $15,000. Can we get a second?
A second at this, Scott Wallace.
Thank you. Let's see. Whoever from Arizona School of Integrative Studies, do you agree to that stipulation?
We do.
Absolutely.
Okay. In that case, Ms. LaMountain.
Dr. Mittman.
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Mr. Ball?
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye.
Mr. Wallace?
Aye.
Mr. Wallace votes aye. Vote of 3 ayes, no nays. That motion passes.
Thank you, guys. We appreciate you. You guys have been helpful in navigating our improvements, so we appreciate all the support.
Great.
Oh, and for the record, we also uploaded all of our graduates as well last week, too, timely. Just for the notes.
Yeah, and just quick
for clarification. Extra credit.
Yeah,
I know,
extra
right?
Credit. Quick clarification that is that still necessary?
It is not.
Okay, got it. Well, you've got a lot of good files you can hold on to.
We will destroy those files.
But. Okay. All right.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Bye bye.
Next up,
So these are reviews. I do not believe that there's any actions that we'll be taking on these. And so first up is American Home Inspectors Training. Ms. Illingworth, do you have an opening statement?
Hello. Yes. Good afternoon. So my name is Jamie Illingworth. I'm compliance analyst with AHIT, also known as American Home Inspectors Training. And with me today, I actually do have two other folks with me here. I have Damon Nolan, the accounting manager, who will be able to speak to financial questions. And I also have Nicole Andler, director of compliance. And American Home Inspectors Training, or AHIT, is a leader in online home inspector, the online home inspector education field, offering licensing and continuing education courses for inspectors around the nation since 1993. AHIT was acquired by the CE Shop LLC at the beginning of 2022, which is well known for its online licensing and continuing education offerings for multiple industries, including real estate, mortgage, and with AHIT, home inspection. With the CE Shop becoming AHIT's parent company last year, AHIT has increased digital marketing and search engine optimization reach, as well as streamlined operational expenses and started to lean more towards online-only education. And with that, I can open up the floor to any questions. We'll be happy to help you out.
Mr. Wallace, Mr. Ball, any questions? I guess I'll just start. So post-acquisition, have you seen changes in either search engine optimization, or how has it affected your expense structure?
Well, I know the CE Shop has a very robust digital marketing team with lots of history and established practices. So we've been able to lean on those practices to expand. I don't have any exact data on hand with me today to represent how much that has specifically grown, but I know that the tools that are available through the CE Shop have definitely increased our reach through digital marketing.
I did a quick Google search just to check, and you do show up on the first page, so that's good.
Okay. I can definitely say this is Damon and the accounting team more so. Our digital marketing team has been spending a lot of time and effort kind of making that a lot more efficient, and then using some of the things that we already have with the CE Shop already to kind of benefit that.
Okay. Questions, Mr. Wallace, Mr. Ball.
This is very obvious to me. I just want to confirm that for the period, for calendar year 22, you took on significantly a significant amount of additional debt, and that adds to your interest burden rather significantly. Your revenues are up. That's I think good. And your educational income is in the positive side. That's your debt service and other income of $6.3 million that are driving a good part of the loss. Is that, do I understand that correctly? Have I read that substantially correct?
So I can add some commentary on that. So with the debt addition, part of that was with us acquiring Ambition. That was early in 2022. Also, within the last 2 months of the year, we acquired two other companies that are in different industries overall. And that was more so where a lot of the debt draw came in from, as well as the 6.3 and the other losses that we have. That's just related to transactional expenses as part of those acquisitions themselves.
Okay. All right. I understand. Thank you.
Uh-huh. All right. Well, thank you for the update. But I do have to comment. So, Damon, what's that picture of you?
That is me. I live in Colorado itself, where the CE Shop is headquartered. And that is me and my two dogs doing a hike out here on top of one of our mountains.
And so you're sitting like on top of a mountain. Is that right?
Yep. Yeah, Windy Peak, I think, is the name of that one.
Okay. I'm just looking at it, and it looks like you're like, you know, because when you speak, like radiating circles come out of your thing, and it looks like you're like the guru on top of the mountain delivering like a sermon or something like that.
That, I could definitely go for that.
Okay. Well, good. All right. Well, thank you very much. Thank you very much for the update, and keep up the good work.
Mm-hmm.
Good joke. All right. Arizona Automotive Institute. I see Mr. Childress.
Hey, guys. Good afternoon.
Almost here, but go for it.
Oh, my bad. Week late to the change. Appreciate the time this afternoon. My name is Dalen Childress. I'm the Vice President of Operations for Encora, and I've got the privilege of standing in and sharing this continued positive narrative on behalf of AAI for Lauren Morocco, as she's on PTO today. Also on the call is Colin Malchow. He's our CFO, Joe Feiler, Senior VP of Finance, and Amber Powell, our Manager of Compliance. Just kind of getting into an overview here. I know Lauren has spoke on some of the reasons historically why we've been, in other meetings, why we've been optimistic and focused on delivering, you know, a couple of key initiatives for the campus, largely focused around what we would call our operating rhythm. And the first piece of that operating rhythm has a primary focus on human capital. And the combination of her solidifying her leadership team, but also being able to pull increased talent levels, if you will, even down to the PD level. So throughout her business unit, just a huge focus on human capital was kind of the mission in the back half of 2021 and 2022. And, you know, for her and her team, they're starting to really see the fruits of that by, you know, creating an environment that our students, one, want to come to, and that two, produce a financially healthy campus. And some of those efforts led her campus to going from a net loss in 2021 to ending 2022 fiscal year at $1.1 million of EBITDA. Some of the continued trends of that through the first quarter of 2023 shows a positive trend of month-over-month population growth for the first 3 months of 2023, and currently pacing to finish right at 25 students ahead of budget through the end of Q1. And with that population trajectory, we also anticipate AAI to be a positive EBITDA at the end of Q1 as well. Couple of just high-level attributors to their early 2023 success is, if you focus on the front end, there's increased demand in that market for the programs that she has, and also demand that they're creating on the ground. And then secondarily, the conversion on the admission side has been really strong the back half of last year and the first part of this year with some of the human capital investments that they've made. Some evidence of that is just from a population standpoint. We carried in 268 to start January and plan to finish just short of 350 at the end of Q1. Those are some high-level updates of the campus through the first part of this year. I know that Lauren and her leadership team have done a great job with just creating that environment and repositioning this campus to reoccurring profitability. I know another piece that's kind of come up in the past has just been the element related to Encora's overall earnings trajectory. And we're also happy to report that the company will return to being EBITDA positive in 2023.
That's a bold prediction this early in the year, given where you finished last year. So we'll have to mark that down and come back to it next year.
It will be one that will be revisited all year long. So
prepared to do so, sir. Yeah. Congratulations to Lauren, you and your team, if Lauren's there, because the Arizona campus has certainly done well.
Yes, sir.
Questions, Mr. Wallace, Mr. Ball?
I don't have any questions. This is Scott Wallace.
Okay. Mr. Ball?
No questions.
Okay. Yeah. Well, thank you. And thank you for having, such a good school here in Arizona. You know, our primary responsibility is protecting the students in our mm-hmm. state, and also the state's student tuition refund fund. And so, having an operation like Lauren and her team are running here is really great. And I wish you the best of success throughout the rest of the year. And I'll ask you about how 2023 turns out about a year from now.
Yes, sir. Looking forward to it. It's an exciting time for us. So thank you for y'all's time and look forward to continue this trend.
Thank you. Be well.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Okay. Next up, Aspen University.
Good morning.
Dr. Saint-Arnaud, it's so nice to see you again.
Thank you so much. We have with us today myself, Sherry Saint-Arnaud, I'm president, David Garner, and Michael LaMontagne, who's our VP of Finance, and he will give you the review of our quarterly report.
Great. Good morning, everybody. Still for you guys, afternoon for us. I just wanted to start out. Thanks, you guys, for taking the time for listening to our quarterly report this morning. An overview, start with population. I mean, that's ideally, what we're all here for is graduating students and enrolling them. So our population at the end of January 31st was 7,151 students. We continue to enroll roughly 750 students a quarter, which is, it's a decline from the prior year. As we know, we're going through a teach out in our pre-licensure program. So we continue to see those declines in pre-licensure, but we're still seeing consistent enrollments in our online program and doctoral programs. The next thing I would say is that our revenue, as you guys, I've submitted three reports for you. We have a balance sheet, statement of accounts, which is an income statement, and then the cash flow statement. We've generated year to date through 9 months, $31.8 million in net revenue. Our cost of revenue, approximately $13.9 million, which gives us a gross margin of roughly 66%. General and administrative costs have come down slightly at $12.5 million. And our operating income still is positive at $2.5 million. So that's a broad overview of our income statement. The balance sheet, and I'll open this up for questions, as I'm sure there will be some. The largest assets that Aspen continues to have is our accounts receivable. Our accounts receivable through January 31st is $13.3 million. That's actual current accounts receivable with a $5.1 million long-term contractual accounts receivable. So that's what I would say that our focus is on is continuing to collect on those students. 70% of our student population are monthly payment plan students or cash paying students, and 30% of them are in Title IV. So I wanted to keep that in the frame of mind as well as why our accounts receivable is the way it is. So that would be my overall opening statements. I'd like to open it up to questions. I'm sure there are a lot of them, and answer them the best that I can.
Boy, you said that. Now we have to ask you a lot of questions.
Yeah. Well,
we just.
I'm ready for you.
Questions, Mr. Wallace and Mr. Ball.
Oh, this is Doug. I'll just have one question. I get by now you've submitted your first reimbursement package, right?
It's being submitted on Monday morning. Initially, it was going to be a 30-student submission, and now we can submit it every 30 days. So we wanted to make sure that we had a larger submission. So it's going out on Monday. And the anticipation is that would be approximately a net, a little over $2 million return once they approve it and reimburse us, net of refunds, et cetera.
And they have, 30 days to do that?
Correct.
No further questions from me.
This is Scott Wallace. I do not have any questions.
That's not.
Okay. I guess the only question that I have, and thanks for clarifying, Mr. LaMontagne, about the mix of students in the payment plan that Aspen has versus Title IV, because that certainly mitigates the effects of heightened cash management.
Right.
But in terms of your balance sheet, your current assets and your current liabilities are about 0.55 or so, right. And I just wonder, that's inclusive of the monies that you're expecting to collect, in the course of this quarter, and so how is your cash relative to your current liabilities and your ability to stay on top of that?
It's a great question. As these statements are January 31st, that we discussed in the last meeting in February, we sent out a settlement letter opportunity for all the graduates for a 25% discount on their outstanding balance for any graduates if they paid the 75% in full. And we have done that in February and in March. And as of yesterday, we've collected roughly $1 million in cash that is not reported on this financial statement. So the combination between that, the cash that we have, and the continuation of our MPP payments that are paid monthly, which is approximately $1.5 million, we are on top of continuing to pay our accounts payable. Our accounts payables are roughly at 30 days. And we're making payroll and continuing to pay all the refunds and all the stipends out to the students. We're able to stay on top of that due to that large mix with MPP students.
And so do you expect to continue to kind of roll that over each quarter?
Well, that program is supposed to stop, I think, within the next week. It's not a continuation program.
So it's a one-time.
It's a one-time plan, but we should be receiving that approximately $2.2 million in net disbursement reimbursement back from the Department of Ed. Once we do that, and we can submit a reimbursement every 30 days, we should be on top of the cash flow and wouldn't need for that program have a need for that program. But it has been successful.
Right. Well, it's good as a one-time because then otherwise it decreases your net tuition revenue.
That's right. And exactly.
Okay. Well, great. All right. Any other questions? I don't think we've fulfilled Mr. LaMontagne's expectation of lots. maybe if we combine all the times that we've spent together, that could do it.
No pressure on you. That's enough questions. If you don't have any more, you don't have to make some up.
Yeah. All right. All right. Well, hearing none, thank you for the update and, thanks for your perseverance and your commitment to fulfilling the mission of the university, but also for each of the students who've entrusted their careers with you. So thanks.
Absolutely. Thanks, you guys.
Thank you so much. Thank you for your time.
Bye-bye. Sure.
All right.
Good morning.
Nice to see you, Mr. Assad.
Hello, Dr. Maitman. Good morning to members of the Finance Committee. With me today is Teresa Lewis, our Director of Compliance. And just a really brief update, and I hope you've had a chance to kind of read through the summary I shared with you. Share once again what I previously shared during the board meeting. We were blessed with a very generous gift specifically for our Arizona campus that is allowing us to grow the campus and expand, and we are expanding the actual physical space by roughly 1,500 square feet. We're very close to finishing up our mental health clinic, which will be made available to the community and to our students, to go through their practicum in the MFT program that we offer. We've also have grown our faculty and staff. In comparison to 2021, when we had 2.5 full-time faculty, we didn't have too much staff. They managed both. In fall 22, we have 7 administrative faculty and staff and 6 teaching affiliate faculty. So there's a lot of things that are happening, a lot of exciting things. We also intend on expanding our mental health clinic presence in Arizona. So after we get this one successfully opened, we hope to look for opportunities to open others around the Phoenix area. On the financial front, I've shared with you when we met last time at the board meeting, our fiscal year 22, we ended very well. If you put aside financial market performance, we actually had a positive $1.9 million before, depreciation, amortization, and the unrealized losses on the investments. For fiscal year, for that particular year, under U.S. GAAP, when you look at the audited financial statements, it will reflect, $19.4 million as a loss, because of the unrealized losses that we've had to show on our statements from the endowment. For fiscal year 22, we netted our cash flow from operating activities. We've picked up almost $4 million. We ended up with liquidity of roughly $43 million. And as of January, actually, of this year, our liquidity is about $50 million, a little bit north of $50 million. This is cash on hand. The gross tuition revenue as of December 31st was approximately $10.7 million. Other expenses were about $19.8 million. For the first 6 months of the current fiscal year, we're showing a surplus of $2.2 million, after amortization and depreciation. And on our capital campaign, the great news is that we're only $800,000 away from the goal of $150 million, and we expect to have that by June 30th of this year. Specifically for the Arizona campus, and just as a reminder, the Arizona campus is not a standalone entity. It's simply we see it as a division. It is all under the one entity, the Fuller Theological Seminary. For fiscal year 22, the gross tuition revenue was $600,000, and then the gifts and grants that we recognized from the large gift was $1 million. The total expenses were $660,000, and inclusive of that $1 million gift, the campus had approximately a surplus of $1 million as well. So that all worked out nicely. For the current fiscal year, through December 31st, the Arizona campus tuition revenue is about $169,000, and rolling over the, you know, the leftover funds from the gift from the prior year. Total expenses were close, was $910,000, and total expenses were about $400,000 for the same period, which leaves us with a surplus of about $680,000. So this is really a brief and quick snapshot, and happy to take any questions you might have. Mm-hmm. And if at all possible, with, you know, with you know, respectfully consider removal from quarterly reporting, if you deem it appropriate. So,
okay. Questions. Mr. Ball, Mr. Wallace.
So the Arizona campus, which is a division, is a relatively small part of the entire entity.
It is.
About what percent of revenues? Just.
Yeah. If I presume your question is primarily related to tuition revenue only.
Yes.
I would probably say about 3%, maybe.
Okay. Fair enough. I'm just
pretty small.
Trying to get a perspective. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, and you are doing development activities in Arizona to attract contributions and other non-tuition revenue.
Yeah, by all means, I mentioned the generous gift of, it's actually $4 million that, you know, we're recognizing as we apply it, and that development effort continues. We do have a related party or foundation, and we have development officers located in the area that are, you know, work with our significant donors. Yep.
Mr. Asad, how long was the going on?
Can you repeat the question?
Oh, how long has the $150 million comprehensive campaign been going on?
3 years. It's been 3 years, and we're almost at the end of it here. So we're
good. Yeah. Well, I have a very good friend, one of my bicycling buddies, who is a minister. And when I told him that I got to talk to the folks at Fuller Theological Seminary, added quite a bit of accolades. Tremendous. It's an honor to have you guys here in Arizona. You're already in California.
Well, thank you for that, Dr. Maiman. It's a pleasure to be there, and our Phoenix campus is really getting a lot of focus of Phoenix and Houston, and we're putting a lot of emphasis on development and growth in both, you know, regions.
Okay. And at this point, we're not in a position to remove from quarterly reporting, but I believe we have an upcoming meeting in June. And, you know, I would just say that, I mean, I can't predict what's going to happen in June, but if everything is going in the same direction, I don't see any reason why.
Sure. Well, thank you for the consideration. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
And Dr. Ms. Saad, and Ms. Lewis, if you would now in the next, before we get to the June meeting, send me a letter requesting to be removed from financial reporting. That way I can include that in the board package for
sure. Happy to do that. Yeah. Thank you.
Great. All right. Well, congratulations and good luck with the last 800,000. The last, what would it be? It would be, I don't know. Mr. Wallace, the last 0.5% of your campaign.
Right. And I think we're getting there. We're probably already, halfway through the 800 by now. So I think we'll make it.
Okay. Well, good.
Much appreciated. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Bye-bye. All right. And Inspection Go Academy. Ms. Macy, are you here? Inspection going once. Inspection going twice. Inspection go three times.
Yeah, I don't. Is there anyone from Inspection Go? All right, hearing none, I'll have a chat with them later, and they will be in front of you in June.
Okay. Right. Well, with that, thank you to our staff for, you know, it's, you know, whatever work we have to do as a board, it's always made easier by, you know, the outstanding work that our staff does. And I love the new format of the materials, the way we get them, everything in one place. It's actually in several places, but if you only want to go to one place, there is a one-stop shop, to access all of the documents. And, so thanks a lot to you guys. And with that, we are adjourned.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, everyone.
Bye, everybody.